Senate Committee on Judiciary work session Wednesday, January 19th, 1977, room 346, 3 p.m. This is a work session, and ordinarily we do not take any testimony during work sessions, but some of these bills unfortunately didn't hit the calendar in time to give enough notice to people. It was felt, so we will be hearing from anybody that wants to be heard today. We'll turn first to Senate Bill 54, Judge Lentz. Justice Lentz.
Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, the chairman was kind enough at my suggestion on a letter to have this bill drafted. I'll give you briefly the background which led to the suggestion. I had a case assigned in for trial which was of some notoriety, State versus Hawkins, in which the defendant was charged with four counts of murder. They were all being tried at the same time under the accusatory instrument. The defendant had earlier moved before the chief criminal judge for a change of venue on the grounds that the publicity surrounding the original circumstance in the first trial were such that he could not receive a fair trial in Multnomah County, and that motion was denied by Judge Dooley sitting in the chief criminal court. And the way this is then used to set up is to then exhaust your peremptory and then take the position upon trial when you've exhausted your peremptory that if you had any more peremptories, you would use them. And it's already been shown that you have had to get rid of 12 people plus all those that you had to get rid of for cause. And the way this is used is to set the foundation for an appeal on the grounds that you showing you actually can't get a fair trial. Well, when the case came in, the defense lawyer took up a preliminary motion on the trial, and claiming that the statute as it presently exists, 136.230, should entitle the defendant to 48 challenges because he was being charged with four crimes, each of which was punishable with life imprisonment in the penitentiary. And I thought about this for a while and finally decided that although it would be time-consuming and burdensome from a monetary standpoint at the time, that the case had already been tried once, had come to the Court of Appeals, had been reversed and sent back for a new trial, and that I was going to try to avoid any error in sending it up again. And I think much to their surprise, I decided to give them 48 peremptory challenges. And as a consequence, also, of course, gave the state then 24, the 12 and 6 upon each crime charged in the indictment. It worked out fine insofar as the venue, change of venue problem was concerned, because after a few days, they got tired enough that, if my recollection is, the defense only exercised approximately 23 out of the 48 peremptory challenges. We're therefore unable to take the position of, look, we've run out of peremptories and we would have exercised more had we had them. So probably in that particular case we had a good result out of it. But it is ambiguous, I think, as to whether it's more than one, in effect, capital crime, or not that's the wrong word anymore, but a crime punishable with life imprisonment charged in the accusatory instrument, and you're having only one trial, whether they should have 12 and 6, and of course getting down to the other cases where they're not charged with or punishable with imprisonment for life, whether it should be 6 and 3 upon each one of the counts charged. So I suggested this, and just when you first sent it up to me, I took a look at it, it looked fine to me. Then a moment ago, Judge Hicks drew something to my attention which leads me to believe that perhaps it needs some change. Now, they think the language starting out, if the trial is upon an accusatory instrument in which one or more of the crimes charged is punishable with imprisonment and penitentiary for life, the defendant is entitled to 12 and the state to 6 peremptory challenges, no more. I think that's perfectly good up to that point. That makes it clear that no matter how many counts you have, you still get 12 and 6. One or more of them is chargeable, is punishable by imprisonment for life. But it goes on to say, if the trial is upon an accusatory instrument in which one or more of the crimes charged is punishable otherwise. All right, you have a, let's take an accusatory instrument in which you have a, the man is charged with murder and also burglary. You see, then where would we be? It's complex. Therefore, I think there's going to have to be some work done on the second sentence, and I have two possible approaches that I might, these are off the top of my head, because Judge Hicks just pointed this out to me. You might start out the next sentence by saying, in any other trial, the defendant is entitled to 6 and the state to 3 such challenges. That would be in anything, therefore, in which the accusatory instrument did not have one or more charges which are punishable by imprisonment for life. That's one possible wording, I think. And another possible wording would be to say, to start it as if you have, with the parallel construction you've used, and to say, if the trial is upon an accusatory instrument in which no crime charge is punishable with imprisonment in a penitentiary for life, then the defendant is entitled to 6 and the state to 3. It seems to me, however, that you really need it by starting out the second sentence and just saying, in any other trial. Now, it's obvious this doesn't apply to civil trials because this is in the chapter on criminal procedure, the trial of criminal cases. And with that out of the way, that's the only thing I now see that might be a beneficial change. There's one other thing that has occurred to me since it goes to this same statute. About 4 years ago, I think it was, the matter of taking all challenges in writing by secret ballot came into the law. And prior to that time in Multnomah County, the practice was otherwise. It was always oral, although around the state it was more apt to be written. And many of the attorneys in Multnomah County, both from the prosecution and the defense side, don't want to be bothered with this. They think it's cumbersome, it's not always understood, they run into problems, and it just occurs to me that as long as you have this section before you, you might be able to go to subsection 2 and in effect provide that peremptory challenges shall be taken in writing by secret ballot unless the parties stipulate otherwise as follows. Now, the only thing that bothers me is I wouldn't want the parties to be able to stipulate to a change in the order that is set out in A, B, and C. It may be that, that in order to modify it rather than to the simple way to insert the wording I just suggested after the word ballot, that it might be better to add a subsection 3 in which you simply say, the parties may stipulate to take challenges orally, or something of that kind, to exercise such challenges orally. But it's not a big thing. You have the section before you, and I thought maybe if you wanted to turn your attention to that. I have been a little bit worried about waiver, and when I was sitting on the trial bench, even when the party said they wanted to stipulate otherwise, I didn't do it because I was afraid the statute said shall. And I didn't want to get into some question of allowing waiver and then having it raised on appeal and the matter come back. So I just always said, no, I'm not going to. The court won't accept the stipulation. You'll do it in writing. But the main part of the bill is the first part. And there is this, I see, after Judge Hicks pointed out to me, I see this possible ambiguity.
Questions of Justice Knight.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the time.
Section 2, would it be acceptable to say peremptory challenges may be taken in writing, period. If they are so taken by, may be taken in writing by secret ballot, period. If they are so taken, the method shall be as follows.
Well, then I'm afraid you get into the problem of it says may be taken, and supposing the parties don't agree. One says, I want to take in writing, the other doesn't. I think you almost have to, as long as you're going to direct that they be writing. The idea, I think, is to get across, and I haven't studied the wording myself that much, Scotland. The problem simply is that sometimes you're trying an indictable misdemeanor, you're trying a Class A misdemeanor that's been brought before the circuit court on indictment, and the parties don't want to fool around with it, with written challenge. They just want to get to trial. They've got one issue they want to try. For instance, do we have the right guy? It isn't, you know. And here you are with this cumbersome procedure of 6 and 3. And half the time they get it mixed up because somebody, the defense attorney doesn't use his challenge, he calls for a third peremptory challenge, and you get it up, and the DA says, defense challenge, and the defendant is saying, that's plaintiff's challenge, and of course that's not so, it is the state's challenge, they followed up on it. And I say, counsel, this is an invalid ballot, please approach the examiner. I think it's better to just, really the better way, I think, is simply to specify with a subsection 3 that they could stipulate that they be taken orally rather than in writing.
Any questions, Justice Martin? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any motions? Is there any objection to that amendment? That amendment will be adopted then. Is there a further amendment?
I think we ought to put in a subsection 3, Madam Chairman, to take care of the problem regarding the
motion is to add a subsection 3 as described by Justice Lent. Is there any objection?
Madam Chairman,
Senator Brown.
My initial impression that it might be best to go the way Justice Lent originally suggested and put that a proviso for non-written challenges in line 11.
Well, we're dealing with the stipulation at the moment.
I think Madam Chairman explained the point. Rather than in the line 11, I think it would be clear if we had a subsection 3, which states the parties will stipulate challenges.
Mick, do you have any comments?
Madam Chairman, I think line 11 is an awkward place to put it because of the unfortunate way that sentence is now constructed. The subsection 3 is going to be easier to draw than to rewrite that line.
Okay. The motion is for a subsection 3. Is there any objection? Would be a subsection 3 then? Is there a motion on the bill as amended? Senator Brown moves the bill out as amended. Discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Deputy Brown.
Any question?
No, not really. There's no one else here. You're the one fumbling.
Anyone else here to testify on 54? No. Clerk, call the roll.
Deputy Brown.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes. Let's turn to 161. Mr. Rupp was here and testified. Is there anyone here to testify on Senate Bill 161? Mr. Rupp was here, as you recall, and testified that that he had an AG opinion that the mental and physical ailments reported to the motor vehicles, which were to be confidential, were in fact not confidential because they weren't in the public records law on line 11 of page 4. Roger Williams, the president of the Newsmen's Association, just stopped by and said that I might relate that he had no objection to it and that he felt it was a proper amendment. Is there any motion on 161? Yeah.
I move we pass Senate Bill 161, so I'll do that second motion.
Move that Senate Bill 161 be moved out with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
So that's the only change, that one addition on line 11 to page 4.
Diana?
Maybe a classic of a large bill with a very small amendment.
Clerk, call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Bill passes.
Judge Hicks, did you want to say anything, or are you just waiting to hear Ms. Amendment?
Scott and I are here on this 123 that were 223 that we testified about Monday. We have collaborated on some amendments that were offered to the committee at your request. We're just here if there's any questions about those amendments.
Fine.
It's satisfactory to both of us as far as his office is concerned and the judge's office.
Anyone else here on 223? Let's turn to 223. Would you and Judge Hicks come up?
Senator Brown, members of the committee, I'm Michael Gillette, State Solicitor General, appearing here with the State Court Administrator, Judge Hicks. On Monday, the committee asked that we prepare jointly some amendments to Senate Bill 223, and those should be before you now. What these amendments do basically is describe in more detail the practice which exists now, as I outlined it on Monday. They would start by deleting lines 6 through 10 of the bill and inserting two sections. The first says that wherever the Attorney General has declined to represent a judge.
Just a minute, please. Are these before us? I'm sorry.
They should be. I don't know if Mr. Chisholm had a chance to consider them or not. All right.
All right. Right, go ahead.
It would add a section. It would change section 2 to provide whenever the Attorney General has declined to represent a judge as a state officer, the judge may, subject to the provisions of ORS 30.260 to 30.400, that's the Tort Liability Act. We want to be very sure that we don't accidentally exclude the right to protect judges from lawsuits. Employ private counsel is provided in Section 3. Section 3 is the heart of the matter. That provides, in any case in which the judge desires the appointment of private counsel, he shall so notify the state court administrator. The state court administrator, under the direction of the Supreme Court, may authorize the judge to employ private counsel under the following circumstances. And I'll summarize those very quickly. The first is where the judge is a defendant and there's no party directly involved in the outcome of the action or the suit who could who should fairly represent bear the cost of representation. The second is where there is such a party, but in the opinion of the court administrator, that party won't perform the function adequately, and that sometimes happens. It just appears the issue is too important and the lawyer is too inexperienced, or for some other reason will not perform the function adequately. It's rare, but it happens. The third situation does not require that the judge be a defendant. That's in any action, suit, or proceeding where the state court administrator finds that employing private counsel is necessary to protect the public interest, the integrity of the judicial system, or the interest of the judge. This contemplates the rare case where a judge may wish to be a plaintiff himself against, for instance, his county commissioners, in trying to determine what their obligations are to assist him in providing for sufficient personnel and so on to adequately operate his court as an institution of state government. And there are circumstances where the Supreme Court may very well wish to disperse those funds to assist in that kind of project, and this would authorize that.
Good.
I think the amendments improve the bill, and they're completely satisfactory with the court.
Questions by the committee?
Senator Smith. In Section 2 new language?
Yes, there is, as I recall.
Yes, that's
in. Right.
May the Attorney General now decline to represent the judge?
Yes.
So it's not new language?
No, it is not. No, it's. He presently has that authority to refuse to represent any state officer.
Okay, what is the current practice when he refuses to represent a state?
Well, I'll let Judge Hicks answer.
If the judge wants to be represented, he communicates to the Supreme Court that the Attorney General has declined to represent him in the case and asks permission to employ private counsel at the expense of Supreme Court budget, which is actually in the Circuit District Court's budget, but it's supervised by the Supreme Court. And then he is told by letter that yes, you may employ a counsel, and the counsel may submit its bill, or sometimes he said the Supreme Court doubts that this case should be tried by private counsel, and therefore we make no representation that if you employ an attorney, the court will accept his bill.
and then the judge can decide whether to take that risk, pay it out of his own pocket, or whatever.
How does this change that?
It doesn't, that's what we do. This bill codifies what we're doing so that we feel we want it in the statute as to what the procedure should be so that it's clear to everybody what's happening. The legislature has put these funds in the Circuit District Court's budget for legal expenses since 1971, but it really wasn't spelled out in another statute as to why those funds were there or just how they were to be used or how and who makes the decision to use them. And the court and the judge's wishes for this bill was merely to put that into the statute so it was spelled out.
Are there any directions that...
There's nothing, we don't want anything new that isn't being done.
Okay. Are there any directions currently regarding guidelines for the Attorney General to you that declined to represent a judge or not to represent a judge?
No.
Well, a separate conflict of interest.
Separate conflict of interest. There's a specific statute on that.
Well, then the Attorney General could deny everyone.
We could. In fact, the practice is almost the opposite. We take most of them.
Does that worry you at all?
Worry me that we take them?
It worries me that you might not. Does that worry you?
No. No, not at all.
Well, the cooperation between the judges and attorneys, they don't bother me. All of my experience has been very good. And as far as I know, every time the Attorney General has declined to represent the judge, there wasn't any question that he was doing so in good faith and wasn't any hard feelings on the part of the judge. And many of these cases are really a nuisance case, and it's a big nuisance for the judges, and the Attorney General usually shoulders the burden of handling them for the judges. And it's a burden to them, too, but they get stuck with the work.
Oh,
it's the unusual case that we're talking about still.
Yes, did you
I tell you that we do usually shoulder the burden, and I'm the one who usually tries the case myself. I tell you it is a burden, and they are usually just nuisances. They're designed to annoy a judge, usually. And so we step in and try to annoy the other side instead. With indifference, if
you
say,
I might can't let them go by default. Something has
no.
to be done.
That's the point. You cannot let it go. Somebody has to do something, and obviously we need to protect the system, so we take them unless it's very clear that there's someone on the other side in the case who ought to be doing it instead.
And why?
Is there any, does it bother you or concern you that the there might be a case where the county commissioners and the judge got at loggerheads and the judge wanted to take out after the county commissioner? And then you would have to make a decision, which at some point or another would be rejected on whether you were going to enter that. There doesn't seem to be any guideline in here for you to refer to decide when you'd enter it and when you wouldn't.
No, I think that's a classic situation that state officers are faced with all the time. We have a policy right now. We would never mix into a case like that. That's the kind of struggle in which we simply would not become involved.
That's the 180.
Wouldn't C allow you to, though?
No, C really allows the Supreme Court to fund it, which they presently, I guess, could do, but I think rarely do. But C really speaks to a situation where normally it is only a request of the Supreme Court. I've only had one time when a judge has even asked me to do that, and that was today, funny enough.
Well,
and
we were talking about some, you gave some semi-hypothetical cases where the judge had gotten into loggerheads. Where you're talking about the use of the word plaintiff versus...
Right, but those were cases, we were never asked to represent the judge in those cases.
Oh, you never had a request?
No.
But now today you got one of those?
Today I got one, yeah. Makes this bill very current.
But this doesn't give you any problem because you would routinely refuse?
We would routinely refuse, and there's really never any problem with the judge when you explain something like that. Say, this is fight between you and your commissioners, and that's not a matter for us to get in on.
I think he's just exploring what the possibilities are for each defense, probably when he calls.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have a motion and an amendment?
Would it be adopted?
Motion is to adopt the amendment submitted by Mr. Gillette to Senate Bill 223. Is there any objection? amendments are adopted. Further amendments? The motion on the bill?
Move to the floor, but I'm not even curious.
Get a Wally?
Did you hear that? Madam Chairman, I move Senate Bill 223 to the floor as amended.
Discussion? Clerk call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Tefori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. The bill passes. Senate Bill 3.
I wasn't in that particularly yet, but maybe some people here were talking
to me. If you have a bill that you wanted somebody to be your...
they're here. Right.
Okay.
After me.
Okay.
They're just watching me not presenting a testimony.
Right. Okay. Does anybody wish to testify on Senate Bill 3 that hasn't testified before?
I'm not sure the appropriateness of this, but I had a telephone call from W.C. Harris, Pig Grange Master here at Pig Grange, indicating support for this bill. Now, I don't have that writing, if you're not here, so if I just communicate that to the committee in the form,
Yes, sir.
Boy, all that changed my mind.
Answer the telephone.
That's a juvenile that needs to be fingerprinted.
Your camera, your black ink out. So good.
I'm not sure if fingerprints left to a rental cow is going to be.
You're hard to miss that.
That's a
hanging felony.
Online, does anybody have any suggested amendments?
Madam Chairman?
Yes, please.
I have something here labeled Senate Bill 3 Justification for Revision. There's no name on here. Is that from the committee staff?
What's the history of it?
But this is in favor of the bill, so I don't think it's from them.
No, I don't think
so either. Diana? Is this just the revision? It's from the juvenile law subcommittee.
But you need it tied to something for it. The juvenile law subcommittee, legislative interim committee on the state very by then. Very important. And are there any proposed amendments from the bar?
On line 16, I would move to amend by deleting the word photographed only and add the word both fingerprinted and photographed.
Maybe both
fingerprinted.
And delete only.
We do have the problems, and it occurred not too long ago in Clackamas County, where small children who had been the victims of earlier abuse but survived are later are found dead, killed by their parents. And I think it helps in the identification of a child homicide, where there's been a pattern of abuse against that child, to have the means of identifying the child. I think the parents know that an abused child who has been both fingerprinted and photographed in the past, the photographs help in the prosecution if it needs to be the parents for the abuse of the fingerprints. I have a feeling that then the some extent protect the child against further abuse.
That's the motion. Discussion of the motion. Quick call roll on the motion.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Tafori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Senator Kavori.
Yeah, on line 10, the word could was questioned, and I would like to change the C to a W unless there's some reason why we shouldn't.
All right, the motion is to change could to would on line 10. Discussion? Is there any objection?
Well,
Jim?
I think Senator Brown is going to make a move an amendment that would change that too, but which I'm more in support of than this. But I guess no.
Is there any objection to changing curfew?
Well, all the questions. It would make a mandatory felony, whereas the could would. If we kept the word could, it would still be a judicial function there. Is that what you meant to do?
I don't really know what could constitute a felony mean, and I think I know what would constitute a felony mean.
In other words, if I read it, it would be a mandatory felony. It seems to me that there are certain crimes that where the act is known, it could be charged as a felony, or it could be charged as a lesser included offense, which might well constitute a misdemeanor. But that would be the discretion of the adult court, or at least the adult discretion of the prosecutor. I think if all the facts you could properly charge a felony, then it couldn't come to the point.
Because it's like always on the motion.
Well, then I'm going to move it.
Okay.
I think could make it much broader than
sure does.
Would.
You want all those
discussion? Put Paul Rome.
W. Brown.
No.
Lafori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
I didn't hear that.
Aye.
Wire.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye.
Is there an amendment?
Madam Chairman.
Member Brown.
Madam Chairman, I move that I don't have this amendment written out, but it would state essentially that if the juvenile court has adjudicated responsibility for an act which is committed by an adult would constitute a felony, then following such adjudication of guilt on the part of the juvenile, it would be lawful to photograph and fingerprint the child.
All right, that's the motion. That's an adjudication and a finding of guilt.
By juvenile court.
By juvenile court.
And that which would constitute a felony.
The child can be fingerprinted and photographed.
Yeah.
And this would be to replace subparagraph C within line 9, 10, and 11.
Well, I think it's a conceptual motion that the council can work in.
I would have it stand independently for the moment.
Well, it was my understanding that would be a change if once they've been arrested. If we don't take C out the way it is,
then you're adding a whole new section.
Well, my understanding was that it would be a substitution because if he adds that and leaves C in, any child who gets to the point he's talking about in his amendment would have already been fingerprinted and photographed under C.
No, she is permitted.
She would permit more than his proposed amendment already.
I thought he was going to put it after guilt rather than.
I actually would like the best of both possible worlds. I would support C and the addition of the provision I've just added.
You might want to provision you just added. If you leave C in,
it's redundant.
It's redundant and you've already permitted under C much more than you would do under your amendment.
The amendment is before further discussion?
I'm not sure what he did. Say that again.
Basically, he made a provision that if the child does come before juvenile court and it's an adjudication against the child of responsibility for the commission of an act which, if committed by an adult, would have constituted a felony, then following that adjudication, there will be authorization to photograph and fingerprint.
I suppose a kid could admit the act, and then there would be no need for it for investigative purposes. But under his amendment, after he had admitted the act, it would be adjudicated. Further discussion? Clerk Caldwell.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Safari.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
The clerk didn't hear me.
Harriet. Aye.
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 Was.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Send it to court.
Yeah, I'd like to delete the lines 12 and 13. The subsection D.
All right, the motion is to delete 12 and 13.
Right. It has the issue of intelligent waiver, and which we're going to be hearing over and over again. I don't think a child ought to be able to do that without, what you're doing there is the police come by and say, hey, we'd like to ask you fingerprints. Could you give them to us, please? Without any probable cause or arrest.
Yes.
Yeah. Madam Chairman, I don't wish to interfere, but once the amendments have been adopted by the committee, will there be an opportunity to respond to those once they've been voted in the measure, or how does the committee handle any comments in the gavel?
Well, today we'll take comments if you have them. Would you like to come up and make a comment?
Madam Chairman, an amendment you adopted just a moment ago. Prior to my asking this question, I'd just like to. My name is Mark Kelly, and I'm representing the City of Portland. On the amendment you adopted a moment ago regarding adjudication, I think, as the chairman of the committee is aware, and perhaps some of the members, a large portion of juvenile felony cases never reach adjudication unless the juvenile has in fact committed a felony several times, and they go through what is now called, as I understand it, informal probation, where the juvenile admits to the fact that they have committed a felony, and they are assigned to a juvenile court officer, and the rehabilitation or counseling takes place. But in fact, the case is never adjudicated because it's simply not felt necessary or wise to, you know, put the child through the court proceedings initially, unless they continue to repeat the felony. And I believe. Go ahead.
Are they taken into custody in that case?
Initially, you mean when they're taken?
Well, are there cases where the situation you described, does that ever occur where a kid's not taken into custody first?
As far as I'm concerned, I'm the response representing the Portland Police Department. Taken into custody can be used many ways. Often, a child is taken into custody in a technical sense, and they're left in their home surroundings. And the paperwork is done and forwarded to the court, but the child is never removed from the home. I do this frequently. I do have cases where I will take into custody for a felony crime situation, leave the child in his home surroundings, and later on, it's the judgment of the court to have him informally.
is the converse true? Is what I'm asking. Are there times when you, is it possible to have something handled informally on a, where a kid has committed a felony where he's never taken into custody?
Well, here again, it depends on how you define
custody. Well, I'm talking about the way it's defined in the bill. In section C, if a child is taken into custody, ... he may be fingerprinted.
Yeah.
And the question I'm asking, are there circumstances beyond that, aside from that, where you want to fingerprint a kid, where he has committed a felony? Or is it what you're looking for in there is consent provision, just getting some kid that, for some other thing besides committing a felony?
No, for the consent where I have personally used this and we, under the present provision.
Can you answer my question first? Is it possible to informally treat a kid in the juvenile system who has committed a felony without first taking them to custody?
Well, I'd have to answer no in the most sense.
Okay.
Are the witnesses here, are they testifying on C or D right now?
You should be limiting your remarks to the amendment to delete 9, 12, and 13.
I apologize. I was trying, I misled the committee because I was making reference to the amendment that was passed on a moment ago. On lines 12 and 13, I asked to come up here because the tech response feels that there are cases where this can be to the benefit of the child, and I want an opportunity for him to explain that to you before the committee moves on the motion to leave. Madam Chairman and committee, where I have personally used the consent, which we now can use, is when, and three times in the last 7 or 8 months I've used it. This is a situation where there's a child in a neighborhood that might be kind of thought of by the neighbors as the neighborhood troublemaker. There is a crime that takes place, and everybody's pointing the finger to this individual. In the course of the investigation, I become convinced that this particular person didn't have anything to do with it. And in three of those cases, I've had fingerprints in the crime. I haven't had probable cause to take the child into custody. I didn't want to take him into custody. He's been hassled by his neighbors. And I've gone to the child and the parents and said, we have prints in this case. If you consent to let me take your prints, we can probably clear this matter up once and for all. In three cases recently, I have done that. The child was not involved. I've gone back to the neighborhood and said, look, get off this kid's case. He's not the one that's involved. And it served, I thought, a very useful purpose. And I might add, in these cases, the parents and the child were very, very happy that this was done. It was a real good way to convince everybody that, you know, leave this particular individual alone. So it's valuable for those reasons, and I have used it under those circumstances, and I think it's a valuable tool to have.
Well, I might go along with leaving that in if we made that proviso that this is used in cases to prove innocence and then that there's no permanent record made of those fingerprints, that they're not put into the fingerprint file when they're finished. That you take a print, you compare them, you say, all right, that you're not guilty, and then you take those fingerprints and you're trying to use it. That they're used to show innocence, but not used to build a file. I think that's what our concern with the fingerprint in general is.
I believe I could go along with that with the stipulation that you always have that chance that as an investigator you're being snowed all the way, and once you do get the print you find that the little rascal was involved, and then of course we would want to be able to use that to you know, the investigation would take another turn at that
and
point.
And that's why the point I'm getting at, I think that's really why you'd like to have the print in the first place, not so much to find somebody innocent as to find someone guilty. And not that I'm against finding people guilty, just that I want to be very careful how is it about doing that? Because you can find people guilty by fingerprinting every kid in the state.
I would have no problem with, on a consent situation, to destroy the prints after the job is done of eliminating a suspect. That's
okay.
That's
your amendment?
That would be my amendment.
The prints be deleted if they prove innocent?
Prove non-consumatory.
Yeah.
In the consent situation.
Further questions, Mr. Chairman?
Well,
Madam Chairman, back to lines 9 and 10, am I mixed up or was it clear enough to you? I
before he made it clear to me that you haven't lost anything if you take the child into custody.
No, that wasn't my, I guess it was a misunderstanding on my part, Senator. I wasn't quite getting C. I was sort of where Senator Wires was. I wasn't understanding the purpose of C along with the new motion that was made by Senator Brown. I was confused as to whether adjudication took precedence or whether or not, in fact, it was taken into custody.
I assume the sentence stood, as far as I understood it. Is that right? There's custody involved rather than investigation of crime. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct? So the point is custody, then, as I read it. Okay.
Any further questions?
Well, would the way...
Are you going to question the witnesses?
No, I guess not.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's see, we have Senator Kapori's motion before us. Discussion.
Well, would the way... If Senator Kapori's amendment passed, then the police fingerprinted a child under the consent situation, and it turned out that child had committed a felony, then wouldn't the police, and he was adjudicated, then they would be allowed to, under Senator Brown's amendment, they would be allowed to keep those fingerprints and photographs. Would that be right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't have any objection to that after they were adjudicated. But if they found that they weren't later adjudicated, then under this amendment they would be destroyed. Is that where we are right now? Right. Yeah, that's where we are now.
That's my understanding.
Thank you.
Is there any objection to that amendment? The amendment stands then. There's another amendment needed on line 24. It assumes that Senate Bill 2 will pass. And, well, I hope that's the case. I probably couldn't read quite that It probably should read in the event that Senate Bill 2 passes. Is there any objection to that amendment? That amendment passes then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one other concern, and that is we heard through testimony that, and informally in my office too, that around the state there is a practice of not expunging juvenile records generally, although the law says they should. And some people brought to me the suggestion that in New Jersey, the law says there that instead of destroying them, that what the records are handed back to the juvenile so that you know that they are not, that somebody doesn't say, yeah, we're going to destroy them, and then doesn't bother to. And I would like that put in, that concept put in subsection 4.
Is that the one that your motion that just passed?
Well, I was that generally.
We have a complete section in the juvenile code on expungement, on expunction. And I think it would be more proper there.
What I'm concerned about is that it, in this bill, this says that a kid is virtually arrested, that they can fingerprint. And I want to make sure that if he is found not guilty, not that they wait till he's 18 years old, but at that time, that his fingerprint records are destroyed. I'm really concerned about building up a case file. And that's something I'd like to see happen at that time. I think he's plenty of it, generally.
And that really goes along with the amendment you made before.
Yeah.
That and you want in that event that the prints or the photographs be returned to the child.
Mm-hmm. And that should be in the case of whenever the
prints are not incriminating.
Or if it doesn't put it at that time.
I'd like to move to amend the...
Well, wait, we've got a motion.
What motion was...
You have just moved that where the prints or the photographs are not incriminating, that they should be returned to the child.
Your amendment was broader, was limited, I think, to we're not incriminating for the crime for which he's been taken into custody. I wonder if he's taken into custody for crime X, they take a fingerprint, and he's implicated in crimes Y and Z, which were earlier burglaries in a different residence. Now, would you...
with the non-incriminating, I think I've been perhaps better ground
for that or any other... Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how to do this procedure, but I would like to make an amendment that I think would make it easier for us to deal with his amendment after we dealt with that, because it's the kind of question Senator Bounds brought up. Could I ask him if he'd yield to my amendment or something?
Yeah, just go ahead and say it.
Well, I would like to move to amend subsection 1, section 1, by deleting section C, lines 9 through 11.
Didn't you have that motion before?
No.
No.
No? All right, the motion, Steve, will you withdraw his motion?
I won't vote for it, but I'll withdraw my motion. Because when I get back to mine, it's fine.
All right. Dan's motion is to delete the discussion. You want to address it?
Yeah, well, I thought after talking with Senator Brown yesterday, I misunderstood. I thought the amendment that he's introduced earlier today would be in substitution for subsection C, and which would allow the police to fingerprint and photograph young people who had been adjudicated guilty of a felony. What would have been a felony if it had been committed as an adult. So that in subsequent investigations of a felony,
even after the fact,
yes, it would take away at least two things they want. It would take away their ability to fingerprint young people to investigate that crime that they're now working on. It would also take away their ability to build up a file of photographs and fingerprints of young people who they had once arrested, believing they had committed a felony. In subsequent felony investigations, under C, they will have a pool of fingerprints and photographs that I don't want them to have, that would have come from suspects from prior crimes.
Not under his motion.
No, they wouldn't, because they didn't, if the kid is not guilty, then the fingerprints would be turned back to them.
Right?
So you would never have a file of kids who have been arrested but not convicted.
And beyond that, it seems to be the investigative portion of it is the most important part of the bill.
So your amendment that I got interrupted you on would have gotten, had the fingerprints and photographs turned back to any child who's been cleared.
Right.
Yeah. Much like these.
Yeah. Which were non-incriminatory. Yeah. Under any circumstances. If they're given consensually or if they were given as a matter of being arrested, in either case, if later they found that kid was not guilty, then the fingerprints at that time would be turned back. So you never would have a file of anything except kids who had been found guilty of felony.
Not guilty of the offense for which
taken into custody
or some other unsolved crime on the book.
Do you wish to withdraw your motion?
The only problem that leaves me with is the thing that Senator Kapoor was talking about when he first started bringing his amendment up, and that was that whether or not they would actually be turned back in some places. Which I'll withdraw my amendment.
Yes, I think what we need is subsection 6.
And that would state that fingerprints and photograph files and records of a child shall be returned to that child. And I don't know what the words that ought to be used, but the meaning would be that when if the prints or the evidence is found to be non-incriminatory.
Aren't you going to have something in there that, if you said it, while this investigation is pending, if the crime was solved, they'd always have them, so it wouldn't have to be them in any event within such a certain amount of time or something?
I think you can't keep a kid hanging.
Could I suggest a word?
Yes.
Well, the motion that I intend to make is on line 11 to delete a crime, delete A, and substitute it with that. And I think that would eliminate the time problem.
Mm-hmm. The problem I was thinking of was. You have a burglary and you bring in some young people that you think might have committed it, and then you aren't able to solve that crime, that particular crime. Would you be able to keep those fingerprints and photographs a year or two, even after you've given up, but you still haven't solved that crime?
That shouldn't be a problem.
In my understanding, these amendments.
They can't keep them after they found that he didn't do it. We don't have to find somebody else did do it.
How will we know when they found out he didn't do it? Then have given to him before he leaves that day? No, we can't do that.
Well, obviously the purpose of taking the fingerprints. The purpose of taking the fingerprints are to match them up with some other fingerprints. And if they take those fingerprints and they match them up, they're not his. He gets them back. If they are his, they stay in the file.
And then photograph? Maybe somebody's going to come in next week that will be able to identify that photograph. And after a while, you've had it for 6 months, 3 years.
You
want
to make any amendments?
Well, I would just say, in any case, not longer than, couldn't be held longer than 6 weeks.
You can't do
something
that.
Like that. Well,
you can't do that.
Well, yeah. So what could we put in for language? Because having been a juvenile officer, I know the files kind of sometimes lay around.
Yeah,
waiting to decide.
We had a proposed amendment.
We have one. I'm asking if you want to amend the amendment.
Just make some way so we know it will be released. By some reasonable time.
You want to add a reasonable time?
I don't think that would do anything.
May I read the words to mine, Madam Chairman, and see if that's acceptable? Fingerprints and photograph files of a child shall be returned to the child where the child has not been implicated in any crime.
Is there any time limit?
I'm not happy with that.
You want to amend it to add within a reasonable time?
Just trying to get
the word reasonable is so elastic. There isn't any time limit before which you have to bring a petition against the child on a given crime or what thing.
I'm sure may I make a suggestion that instead of passing this around and we ask our staff to do some wording?
Well,
I think we have to give a direction.
Either we want a time that we don't. Yeah, amend it without having
some
direction
from the amendment. Well, I would like to move to amend the amendment to say we have some time, but I don't know how. Something more limited than a reasonable time.
Well, will you state it, please?
Could it be within, say, it could be if a petition hasn't been filed within within a month after the time the fingerprints and photographs were taken.
Within a month of the time the fingerprints were taken,
unless a petition has been filed within that time, and then until the adjudication is complete, we don't need
unless the petition, because we're dealing only with fingerprints and photographs which have been examined at the time.
Well, petition should be filed, and then the child be exonerated at the hearing, which could take a while before the hearing takes place. Well, let's just say unless the petition's been filed within 30 days.
Right. The amendment is unless the petition has been filed within 30 days. Senator Brown.
And Shirley, isn't it possible that the fingerprints would be incriminatory and the child would confess all, and then there'd be something equivalent to diversion? I think the child would not be taken before the court. The juvenile authorities would try some other non-judicial approach to the case.
Well, as I understand the amendment, it was they were to be returned only if they're found not if they were not exculpatory. And if they're not exculpatory, then they're retained.
I think that is adequate.
Yeah, I think it's all right by itself.
But then the question is, incriminatory for the crime for which taken into custody, or for any crime?
Motion before it is, if a petition has not been filed within a month of the taking of fingerprints and photographs. Is that, have I stated it correctly?
They would be returned.
Berlin?
Madam Chairman, may I speak to Senator Support?
Could you come up to the microphone, please?
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm William Berlin, and I represent the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police, and the Oregon Peace Officers Association. In reference to Senator Kapora's amendment only,
relative to an amendment,
in both, perhaps I can help you resolve it. On Senator Kapora's amendment relative to the return of the fingerprints and the photographs to the juvenile to be subsequently destroyed, I would only ask that you add, in the presence of the officer having custody of those records or fingerprints. In other words, then we don't stand the danger of the juvenile taking the fingerprints out and saying, see, I'm a big man, I've been arrested, and here's my fingerprints, and that sort of thing. I concur with Senator Kapora's example of if the individual is eliminated as a suspect, the record should in fact be destroyed. To Senator Wire's amendment. I lost it.
It's within 30 days of petition.
That would appear to be a reasonable and prudent amount of time.
I'll accept both those.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chairman,
would you come forward, please?
As a suggestion for this problem here, Gary Fonts, Portland Police Department. Possibly you would consider using the language if the child is found not to be within the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. This way, if the matter was handled on an informal basis without the necessity of a petition, but still there was an informal admission of guilt to the situation, that would kind of clean that up, I believe. If the child had nothing to do with the act that he was taken into custody for, then he clearly would not be under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court. For that
purpose. Now, wait a minute. Now, you've already taken him.
Yes.
Okay, well, he's under the jurisdiction now.
Yes.
Okay, well. No. What do you mean the
jurisdiction of the court in a hearing has made a finding of fact that he should be in their jurisdiction?
jurisdiction of the juvenile court is having the court say, okay, you're our okay. child now.
So he's in custody. Now you're saying that if he is under jurisdiction of the court.
Are you trying to retain fingerprints where there's informal handling of the matter?
If there is some sort of an admission of wrongdoing on the part of the youth, and the court decides under the particular circumstances to handle it in an informal nature, because at that time it seems to be in the best interest of everybody, I would say yes, that would be a legitimate means of we should keep these records. However,
my interpretation of what we've done so far, they are returning. We're only returning fingerprints that are exculpatory and no others.
Right. And I was suggesting, Senator, that since the terminology was suggested that you use a time limit if a petition hasn't been filed and that kind of language, I was suggesting that if you use the term under the jurisdiction of the juvenile court, in those situations where maybe a petition wouldn't be filed, but still there would be a informal adjudication that would kind of cover that area.
Right. Do you accept that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your amendment?
I've got a problem, and that is that we need to say in jurisdiction of the court for that offense, otherwise you might find the kid as a runaway, and you think that he's guilty of a felony, and
yeah, I see your
he's still under jurisdiction, although he's innocent of that crime.
I would buy it for that, with that added to it.
All right. Diana, do you have a clerk?
That's your choice.
I think if I understand what we're trying to do, we're still adding a new subsection 6, and we're trying to amend it to set some sort of time frame within which the fingerprints will be returned if the fingerprints are found not to be incriminated. That's correct? Am I correct on where we are? We're trying to work out
the time frame.
Yeah.
Within 30 days, the child has not been found within the jurisdiction.
Within the jurisdiction of the court.
For that offense.
For that offense. All right. Now, Senator Kapori, you can see that you might want to use fingerprints similar to this on your amendment, including the within 30 days and including the not within the jurisdiction of the court and including for that offense. We probably come out with something approximately that I'll try to put it together, adding everybody's suggestions that new subsection 6, the fingerprint and photograph files of the child shall be returned to the child where the child has been found not to be within the jurisdiction of the court for that offense. Within a period of 30 days, then the State Bureau of Identification or the police department having possession of the same shall deliver such fingerprints to juvenile and domestic relations court having jurisdiction of said proceedings upon demand, and they therefore shall be destroyed. And again, Mr. Berlin, this amendment
right.
in the presence of the officer having taken the photographs and fingerprints.
Right, that's correct. Thank you, sir. We have first vote on the amendment to the amendment, which is if the child hasn't been found within the jurisdiction of the court within 30 days. Is there objection to that amendment? Senator Walt Brown objects to that amendment. The motion passes. Again, Senator Kapori's motion that the fingerprints be returned to the child and as amended and destroyed in the presence of the officer. Again.
Question or discussion? I think the discussion we've been having here would indicate that the officer who had custody of them would himself give them back to the child. And that language that Mrs. Godwin just read from has the language in it, upon demand. Do we want, was our intention that it would go back automatically, or does the young person have to come in and ask?
Further discussion. Senator Kapori's motion, the clerk calls roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Tafori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. I move on line 11 to change our crime to that time. Discussion? Clerk call the roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Tafori.
Aye.
Smith.
Aye.
Wires.
Aye.
Madam Chairman.
Aye. Motion passes. For the motion.
I'll move the bill out of the menu.
I think we'd better have the bill and grow.
We'll
have it engrossed and look at it again. Any other emotions? During the further motion, Harriet, we have the bill and grow. Senate Bill 29. Is there anyone here on 29? This is another one of those uniform commissioner bills. We had that for hearing on the 14th, and no one appeared.
During the debate about the uniform bill that Senator Brown carried today, Senator Carson was saying that he's uniformly questioning opposed to uniform uniform bill act, which I wonder if we need to request him to come as a witness every time we consider one.
He'll vote against it.
I think he'll come if he wants to. Unless there's a motion by the committee, I don't propose to take any action on the bill since no one's come.
One person came last time and didn't somehow miss the chance to talk.
I asked, but there's no one here.
I have been contacted by the individual who was going to testify on behalf of this bill for the Uniform Commission, the Commission on Uniform State Law, and he would like an opportunity to come and testify before the committee on issue 29, and he will come up whenever this is set up for discussion. We do have a witness who could be there.
Well, they put the bill in if they want to have it passed. I think they ought to come and be heard on it. Senate Bill 21. Anyone here to address Senate Bill 21? Diana, would you review?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Senate Bill 21 amends an existing statute, ORS 161.665, by changing, in essence, making one critical change, changing the word may to shall in Section 1. That's lines 5 and 6 include changes. My research into this bill indicates that there's a good deal of background on this and that a good many constitutional questions exist about imposing costs on a convicted indigent criminal defendant.
Have you completed your investigation of this?
Not entirely. And it seems to be that when my file is growing thicker, and as I do more research, there have been more questions raised, questions of due process, equal protection, Sixth Amendment rights to counsel, the constitutional right to jury trial. And
Set the motion to table, Madam Chairman?
Yes.
I move the table, Senate Bill 21.
Madam Chairman?
You don't discuss the work.
W. Brown?
No.
Safari?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Wires?
Point of information. No.
Doesn't make any difference.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Motion fails. Without, if there's no objection from the committee, we'll allow counsel to continue their investigation unless somebody wants to make a motion on the bill. Ken?
I'd like to suggest that in our investigation, we also consider if she isn't already the matter of by changing it from may to shall, it seems to me it tips more weight onto line 12 and 13 where it says unless the defendant is or will be able to pay them. It seems to me that as long as it was may, it was very loose at the top, so it didn't matter if it was loose at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's tightened at the top, then it seems to me that unless the defendant is or will be able to pay them without more, then follows on how the determination is to be made, if that's another problem with the bill.
Good point.
Well, I'm concerned that committee counsel is burdened with attempting to launder the constitutional garbage of some other committee that isn't interested in showing up and defending their bill. Is it some way that committee counsel can forward that some of those problems on from whence they came?
I investigated the bill in the minutes of that committee and your report on it.
Yes, I did go to the committee which reported out this bill and asked to look at their committee minutes to see what discussion there had been, and it amounted to approximately none. There was a motion by the chairman of the committee to introduce this bill. It was explained as a staff bill. There was no public testimony, no witnesses appeared, and there was no discussion of the bill in the committee, and it passed unanimously.
The chairman of the committee was?
Go ahead. That was the interim committee on intergovernmental affairs. I believe that was chaired by Senator Fabley. And I have contacted Senator Fabian's staff, the AA, for the interim committee, and Senator Fabley on this bill. Specifically notified them in person of the public hearing on it last Friday, and also gave them notice of the further work session today.
I will do the motion to table the bill.
Motion to table the bill. Clerk, call roll.
W. Brown.
Aye.
Safari?
Aye.
Smith?
No.
Wires?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. So,
Madam Chairman?
Chairman Smith.
How do you vote to take the table bill?
4.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh. Doesn't it? Why?
I don't know.
Well, any motion passes on 4.
Huh?
Any motion passes on 4.
I'll check you out.
Diane, you can check that.
You're right. I got it.
Senate Bill 153.
One unconstitutional thing that have done all session, you guys.
I assume you people are here for the last bill here in 153. We haven't had to sign up, but take turns, I guess. Who wants to go first? Did you testify before?
Yes.
But I said you could testify again.
Yes.
I'm Nancy Swank, representing the League of Oregon Students. And I'd like to thank you for allowing us the additional time to review the impact of this, at least on several cities. I feel a little badly about having to confess to you that my report back to you has to be, again, slightly confusing, because that's the kind of feedback I've gotten from cities that I've checked with. While we believe that the highway division had a very good intent in trying to alleviate the number of court cases which condemnation could be intended to get into with this bill, we have some questions specifically about the vagueness of some of the terminology in the bill. And I'd like to refer you to Section 2. The definition of equipment. And again, the definition in Section 2 and 3, the definition of substantial economic loss. We have some disagreement, I guess, and some strong feelings that perhaps the way the language is currently set up in the bill, there could be more court cases instead of fewer, for property owners trying to define what is substantial economic loss and or what is equipment. We also have some questions with regard to the entire process, whether or not this is already being done by courts and whether this whole bill is really necessary, at least for students. And I'm going to defer to Larry Glassick and the City of Salem to talk a little bit about some of the possible conflicts with the Federal Relocation Assistance Act. And she is a relocator for you. And what I'd like to ask, if it's possible, we would be willing to work to get several city attorneys together and possibly some county legal counsels with the Highway Division to try and prepare some amendments to the bill to clarify some of this language if we had some more time to do it.
I'm curious that you'd rather have that than to be just simply exempted from the bill. Do you think that the bill, the purpose of the bill is good?
I have to confess that there's really some disagreement about that. I think that, you know, we would be satisfied probably to be exempted from the bill, but I would rather have some more time to examine it with some attorneys. I think it takes, you know, I've talked to 5 attorneys today, and I've gotten 5 different opinions about what are all said.
Good question.
Larry Glassick from the City of Salem. We come forward, sir.
I'm Larry Glassick. I'm the real estate supervisor for the City of Salem. Since your hearing last Monday, I've had an opportunity to review this bill together with the city attorney's office. I think, as I stated before, that we agree with statements that Mr. Boyd and Mr. Solis made last Monday, that there is a need to have a more enforceable definition as to what a real estate fixture really is. However, in reviewing the bill, we feel that this particular bill could raise more questions than there already exist, particularly when we go out to appraise and negotiate for property. Although the bill speaks to condemnation, effort of every public agency in their acquisition practices to negotiate a settlement, I feel that this bill may stand in the way of our being able to negotiate an equitable settlement. I believe you should also be aware that there are certain relocation rules and benefits which accrue to business owners, which cover the relocation and removal and sale of personal property. Usually this sale is handled through an auction, after which the property or the personal property has been appraised, and the public agency will pay to the owner of that personal property the difference between what it was bought for in an auction and the appraised amount. Another item that bothers me, and I really couldn't give it a good announcement.
I just want to ask why you, how you tie that last point about the auction and the difference to this.
Well,
I'm not saying I don't think it's relevant. I just
because
I don't
the property owner still receives an appraised value of that personal property, even though it's sold at a lesser amount at a salvage value. He still receives an equitable value for that property.
Well, is it your feeling about that point then, that when the Highway Commission would go out to negotiate with someone about this property that isn't a fixture under the law now, that they could tell the people, look, we can't pay you as a fixture, but when you sell it, if you have to, it has to be sold, we can make up the difference. Is that what you're saying?
Well, quite frankly, I think that even without this law, that option remains. The way I understand this bill, it deems everything a fixture to be purchased with a part of the real estate fee, which means that you go into a restaurant every night, fork, cup must be appraised.
But you think that the way the law is now, it can be compensated?
Well, yes, I do, because I think that you go back to the traditional method of determining a fixture, that is attachment, use, and intent, to make that determination, and working with the property owner, the real estate people who are acquiring on behalf of a public agency can make that determination. I believe that if it goes further, the property goes further into condemnation, I think you're still going to have a difference of opinion from judge to judge as to what a fixture is.
But as I get it, there's some equipment, like say in a grocery store, a pop machine that doesn't, it's heavy and sits on the floor and plugged into the wall. That's the kind of equipment that I understand that the bill is shooting at. If it's going to have a substantially lower value as soon as you take it out of there than it has in place, and if the state isn't now able, the Highway Commission, for example, isn't now able to pay for that difference, and that's why they want this law. And are you saying that your impression that there is a way they can pay for that difference without
it? I have not read the particular relocation benefits, but I believe that there is a way that they can pay for that, providing that the owner does not wish to move it.
Sir, what is your suggestion?
I am real estate supervisor for the city of Salem.
Okay. And is there somebody here from the League of Oregon County? And you're going to testify against the bill, too?
No. I'm just here to
And who are you with, sir?
State Highway Division.
Oh, I see. All right. And you, sir?
I'm with the Board of Forum.
Well, I wonder if all of you people could get together and see if you can work something out. Because it seems we have a real problem here.
I think that our people can. I think Larry has got some of the relocation law mixed up, but maybe we can settle some of these issues with our questions.
Why don't you all meet and report back to us what you come out with?
I'm very happy to.
I'm sure the Highway Department would like to have it back within 2 weeks. 2 weeks from today. Here from the Highway Department, your name is, and you've got?
J. Bruce Boyd. I'm the right of the engineer.
Okay, fine. Then, thank you, sir. If you'll work with them, we'll be very happy to have you. We have one bill left, 142. I don't have anybody testified. We had some testimony from Glenn Knickerbocker, which is an administrator for the Children's Services Division.
Have any problems with the bill?
There appear to be no problems. This would, in essence, supplement Senate Bill 3 and would be in a separate part of the statute, a separate section from
418.
It would be in 418.
Right.
I've received a fiscal impact statement. The fiscal impact is less than $100 per year. In this case, the fiscal office informs me that they do not prepare a formal statement. The fiscal impact is amounts to perhaps an additional couple rolls of film.
Is there a motion on the bill?
Madam Chairman.
Yes.
It would be appropriate to pull the photographing fingerprint of a used child out of the other bill. And we don't have the duplication. I think having abused the child in this situation in this juvenile justice, I think it's maybe not the.
Okay,
right
Diana,
answer.
Will you do that? Bill passed.
No.
We're looking at 142.
Oh.
Okay, go ahead.
Are you suggesting, Madam Chairman, then another amendment to FC3 to remove?
Right.
Subsection 2
and chapter
42.
Okay.
Plug it in here.
Is there a motion on the bill?
If with the fingerprinting amendment to 142, that's what that would be.
Let's see.
Fingerprinting.
Senate Bill 142, as I read it, currently, yes. Written does not include fingerprints.
But would it be pulled in 3 out of the other bill? And put it in here.
Well, would you move to include fingerprints here?
I would so move.
Is there any objection? Passes. Is there a motion on the bill?
I so move the amendment.
Discussion?
Discussion. Yeah. I'm concerned about this. I think I mentioned the other day, showed my concern and question the other day. And, maybe I just need some reassurance or something, but when I was a juvenile counselor and people see something and they think there's a problem there. Now, I'm all for investigating child abuse cases, 100% for it. But sometimes people start deciding that a family is a problem family and they're on welfare and there's a whole kind of bunch of problems going on. And then it gets to be a lot of attention focused on that family. And the people, the school teacher, the juvenile court counselor, the caseworker, all become hypersensitive about this family, which is probably good. But sometimes they overreact. And they think something that really isn't a problem is. And the chain reaction gets set off. One of the things I used to do as a juvenile officer was to get in there and try to calm people down before they had overreacted. And so that's what I'm a little concerned about letting the Children's Services Division decide to, because to fingerprint and photograph a child, you often would have to go in and physically take, with a sheriff, and physically take the child out of the, away from the mother with her standing there screaming and all that, which I participated in doing. And I respect what they say about these bruises fading. So it puts me on the horns of a dilemma. If it's a real bruise, I'd hate to see it allowed to fade. But if the kid actually isn't being abused, and the bruise that's developed on the playground or something, and this hypersensitive situation is developed, I'm a little uneasy about going in and doing it.
It's permissive.
Well, this is permissive, you see, to the Children's Services Division to make this decision. The way it is now, the court makes the decision. You have to go to the judge and say, Judge, we think this has happened.
Oh, I know. But
and this statute is to eliminate the judge as the person that decides whether or not it's done.
I understand that. But I mean, what I'm trying to say is that isn't it finally the judge's decision if you bring an innocent person up, even though there are photographs, is the judge's decision whether or not there's child abuse. I mean, you may cite some people who are.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. It's the trauma that's involved with going in with a sheriff and taking a child away from the mother and
Are you trying to say that photographing is all right, fingerprinting is not?
No, it's the two of them are equal to me. It's the allowing a juvenile, a CSC worker to decide without conferring with a judge in what may be an emotional situation for the juvenile, for the CSC worker. I'm just thinking that maybe the way the law is now is a good safeguard against people overreacting to.
What if there was some kind of safeguard in here that they could only do this where within practical, practicable, I guess is the word, I've never seen this figure, to get a court order? But they would have to make a showing that there was a time or a place where they couldn't, or that there were. They have to make a showing that they had some reason that they couldn't just arbitrarily do it without getting a judge.
Your motion?
I shall move.
conceptually.
Yeah, let me take a look at that. Yeah. I'd have to see what the law says that's being changed there.
Well, just give us.
Yeah, okay, the words I want to.
You don't have to give us the words. Just give us the idea.
Okay, that they have to go to the judge unless they can make a showing that there was infraction within the time.
Make a showing.
Mm-hmm.
To the judge later. Okay, Diane, can you handle that? You find then that men say that an order from a judge for the photograph must be sought unless it can be shown to have been impracticable. Maybe you could work on it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's the general. That's the end of it. It goes to admissibility. Is there any objection to that amendment?
I do hear the cases where a photograph of the abused child is brought in against the parents in a near homicide type case, and the photograph is rendered inadmissible because of some technicality in the law. We're trying to remove the technicality here. We're trying to photograph to preserve the evidence of abuse. And abuse continues, and the child ends up with a homicide case.
I'm prone to want to do anything possible to preserve evidence. I'd err on the side of overreaction and in on the side of preserving evidence. I oppose the motion.
Any discussion?
Well, I think I'd oppose the amendment too because I don't think it would add any safeguard. They're always going to have to show that they were acting prudently, and if there was any question at all about what they did, the judge would feel they should have come and checked with him, and if they could have and didn't, he would be very concerned about it anyway, I think. So I don't think.
Okay, I was
just
going to
support it. Well, I think the testimony was that the reason they need this bill is on weekends. And the time lapse that they can't get a court order. That's when they need the bill.
So okay. So
all that for the time, they can get a court order, which I think they ought to, really. And I want to nail them as well. But it's the lapse, the short period of lapse of time over the weekend where the bruise may heal somewhat prior to the time they can get a photograph. And I think that's a good point.
Okay.
Is there objection to the Senator Walt Brown objects to the motion passes. Motion is passed on the draft amendment. Discussion? Court call roll. Brown?
Aye.
Good. Kapori?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye.
Edson? Aye. Any other business? Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
That Senate Bill 3 was near Buddy's apartment.
Who's Buddy? Let me look at that conference and see what
it's in your mind.
Oh, yeah, we sure had changes.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one.